ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Next America. I'm your host, Jamie Lynn Walnow, and today I'm grateful for this week's host. Her name is Christina Bennett. She is a live action news correspondent, a pro-life voice in this movement. She has an amazing story that she's going to share. You can see more in the link in our bio. You can also go subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Subscribe, hit that notification bell, and leave a comment. We want to hear from you. What do you think about Christina's story? What do you think about the things that she's sharing, that she's seeing? I love the humility in her heart and her voice in our nation, and I just really respect her and admire her, and I hope you enjoy. If you're listening to our podcast, subscribe, share it, leave a written review. We want to hear from you, and without further ado, we're going to hop into this interview and this time that I had with Christina Bennett. Okay, Christina, I am so excited about this episode, and I'm so grateful for your time, and so I thought, let's just hop in and make this like a really powerful punch of information for pro-life and what solutions we can take part of in America. Sound good?
Sounds great. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for being here. So real quick, do you want to paint a brief picture of like what you're seeing day in and day out, or statistics, or whatever picture you want to paint of where we are right now in America with abortion and pro-life initiatives?
Sure. So we're in a really hopeful place. For people that have been following what's happening legislatively, many people may be familiar with the fact that Texas has a heartbeat bill that is still standing, that the Supreme Court did not strike down, even though the abortion industry pressured them to end it, and the Department of Justice, you know, was pressuring them, and even they're before the Supreme Court right now, but it's still standing. And we believe that over 100 babies are being saved every day because of that legislation alone. In addition to that, the Supreme Court is looking at a case called the Dobbs case. That's the short version of the name. And that has to do with Mississippi's desire to continue to have an abortion ban, banning abortions after 15 weeks. And so we're very hopeful that the Supreme Court will rule in favor of Mississippi, and that that will start a trend all across the country of states that are changing their laws and defending the unborn child. And so we're excited about that. We're about to go to the March for Life, which is this weekend. So we're going to see hundreds of thousands of people coming to DC, coming to our nation's capital, young people, old people, people of different faiths and backgrounds and races. In addition to that, there's going to be a pro-life summit. And I think that just shows the enthusiasm that we have in this movement. Even though it has been 49 years, and this is the 49th March for Life, we have a generation of people, young people especially, who are passionate, who are not giving up, and who want to see Roe versus Wade overturned. And we're going to continue to fight until that happens.
I feel so hopeful as well. I'm so excited about this. And I honestly, I feel God on this Roe v. Wade, but I feel as a church, in my, from what I see, I don't feel we're as ready as we need to be for with the day that it comes. And my desire and my dream with The Next America is to empower anyone listening, all Christians, all churches, to be part of helping be prepared for the moment that Roe v. Wade overturns. And so when you think about Roe v. Wade overturning, what can we do now to help for when that hour comes?
Well, that's a really great question, because there is so much that we can do. I like to think about things based on my local community. So for me, what can I do to change the world? I always start with, what can I do to change my neighborhood, change my community, town, city, state, and then I kind of go from there. And so I think it's important for people to think that way, especially because the battle looks different depending on what state you're in and what city you're in. So for instance, I live in Connecticut. Connecticut is a very pro-abortion state. Even when Roe versus Wade gets overturned, abortion will still be legal in Connecticut because it's codified through our state law. We don't have parental notification, for example. We also don't have a lot of maternity homes. And so when I think about what needs to happen in my state, I think, okay, when one day when the laws change in Connecticut and people are not legally allowed to abort children, we need to make sure that we have more maternity homes. We need to make sure that we have better housing. We need to make sure that we have paid parental leave for moms. We need to make sure that we're working on lowering maternal mortality rates, and that we're encouraging people to see doulas. we need to make sure that we're reaching the Black community and communities of color who have the highest abortion rates with the support that they need to carry their pregnancies or to choose adoption. And so think about your particular state, you know, for your listeners, think about your particular church, your neighborhood, your area, what's lacking? You know, for the pregnant women that are there, what do they need? Do they need, you know, adoption agency information? Do they need, you know, a program that would, like Embrace Grace is a Bible study program that people do in their churches and it comes alongside of the women and it supports them. Do they need housing, like I would say here in Connecticut, or do they need programs that would help them with paying for some of their basic necessities, paying for the lights to stay on, or affordable childcare, or daycare services? It's awesome to see what some pro-life churches have done where they've said, okay, we're going to build a daycare in the church. And so not just Sunday school, but a daycare so that moms can have a place to go. And it's not super expensive. And I've seen other even Catholic Christian Protestant schools who have said, okay, we're going to let there be special dorms for pregnant women, or we're going to have a special program where they have childcare provided for them or a center that they can go to so they don't feel like they're alone. So we have to just think creatively and outside the box about how we can meet the needs of women, because there's going to be a lot of need. There's a lot of need now. But as we see abortion decrease and eventually end, there's going to be even more need. So we have to be ready.
I love that because everybody has something different to bring to the table. And I genuinely believe that this is a topic where, whether you're creative, whether you're more logical, which everybody's creative, but there's something, some gift we all have, or the ability to love, that we can put our hands to this, like to the pro-life initiative. And that excites me. Okay, so I have a question.
Same.
There's yes. And I'm so grateful for you, and I'm so grateful for all that you do. And I want to ask, you know, what does it come down to? Because I think there's this misconception that the moms who abort their babies all want to abort their babies. And I have heard a statistic that a majority of women, and I don't know if you could help speak into this more, that a majority of women would want to keep their baby if they could afford it. And are there any statistics or any mindsets that are super common in America that you would want to speak to right now and help bring a little bit more truth and reality to?
Yeah, well, I don't have an exact number, you know, but because the statistics can be difficult to track. But I will say that I worked at a pregnancy resource center for 4 years, and I was a client service manager. So I was meeting with clients who were considering abortion. And I did that for years. And I've also traveled across the country, and I still continue to speak at pregnancy center banquets. I've met a lot of pregnancy center staff and workers, and they will tell you that women who are deciding to have an abortion, so many times they feel coerced. So many times they feel like they don't have any other option. There's very often a partner in the picture who is either pressuring them to have an abortion, saying that he won't support them or he'll leave them. Sometimes it's a parent. Sometimes it's just society, or they feel that pressure from their teachers or their professors. They feel as if they will not be able to do their, you know, their coursework. And so many times women feel like they have no other choice but abortion. One of the questions that we used to ask clients when we would talk to them one-on-one is, you know, it was like a fill in the blank question. So I would parent if I had ... I would choose adoption if I had ... And when we would ask them, you know, what would it take for you to parent? It would usually be very practical things. Well, I would parent if I knew I had the money, if I had housing, if I had childcare, if I had a supportive boyfriend, if I had, you know, my parents not threatening to kick me out. And so, yes, I don't believe that women, you know, go to an abortion clinic and go there chanting, my body, my choice, and, you know, just gleefully excited about they can, you know, exercise their reproductive right. That's what it sounds like when you listen to the news, because when people say shout your abortion and they talk about the abortion industry and they talk about words like reproductive justice and freedom and everything else and liberation, that's not the reality for many, many women who are going to get an abortion. They feel like it's a necessary evil. And so often they feel alone, like they don't have any other place to go. And that's why we really need to support them, because so many would choose life if they had someone in their corner.
Yeah, that's so real. That's where I want the church to step up. I'm like, come on. Like, and I've heard so many statistics, like in Texas alone or Louisiana alone, if every church in Louisiana fostered a child, there would be no foster care system. Like it's just like crazy, awesome. Right? Right. So, okay.
I'm a foster mom too. So come I on. Will definitely say, yeah, I'm a foster mom. I have a toddler that we adopted through foster care at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020. He came to our door as a little baby. And now he's two and he's just a wild boy running all over the place and jumping on all the furniture and everything. That's why he's not here right now, because otherwise he'd be right here next to me. He is super cute though. But it's so important. And one of the hardest things is during the pandemic, especially as we're still in it, but talking to social workers, they were just so overwhelmed because it was even harder to place children because people were scared. If you know, if I'm placing one more child into my house, what if they got COVID? And so they just really experienced a lot of hardship trying to, at least the social workers here in Connecticut that I spoke to, trying to place children into families. So it is something to consider. Being a foster parent, whether it's temporary, whether it's foster to adopt, whatever you decide to do, even short respite care. There's people who will just take babies for just a couple of days straight from the hospital. And that's what happened with my son. Someone else had him for like 2 days. And that's what she does. She only takes them like for 2 or 3 days, like straight from the hospital until they go to another home. And so people should look into it.
I love it. I think that's beautiful. And honestly, it's like as Christians, we are called to this life is not about us. It's about serving others and to help with kingdom initiatives on earth. It comes at a cost. And I think some people, I just want to help break that mindset. Like it does come at a cost to foster. It's not easy, right. I'm sure. And it is out of your comfort zone or to adopt or, you know, to take your time to go and serve the local pregnancy center and to be there for them, to throw baby showers for these moms, whatever it can be. There's so many things that you can do within your skill set. But it's, you've got to get out of your comfort zone and out of the house to help serve and do that. Okay. I'm wondering this, how did you get so involved in this pro-life movement?
Good question. Well, I do not come from a pro-life family and I had never heard abortion talked about in my home and I had never heard abortion talked about at church. So when I was in high school, look, I knew people who got abortions because like I mentioned in Connecticut, you don't have to tell your parents. We don't have parental notification law. So I knew people that got abortions and I don't think I had a strong opinion. I don't even remember what I thought about it at the time. Going into college, I was a Christian. I had accepted Jesus into my heart when I was 12 and I was trying to figure out how to have a relationship with God when I was, you know, in my freshman year of college. Abortion, again, was not on my radar until I was at a church service. And someone approached me and I couldn't tell you who they are because I can't remember, but they said, Christina, God wants you to know that something remarkable happened around the time of your birth. And so I asked my mom, you know, did anything remarkable happen around the time of my birth? And she said that she met an angel before I was born and she did not want to talk about it. That's what she said. So I was involved with the campus ministry called Campus Crusade for Christ. And I went away for a summer ministry trip to Kentucky. And I was working with like the Boys and Girls Club and I was journaling a lot. And I just told myself when I get back home to Connecticut after the summer is over, I'm going to ask my mom again what she meant by saying that, you know, she met an angel before I was born. So I did. And she was getting ready to go somewhere. I was at her house and I asked her and she said, you know, you'd hate me. And I said, Mom, I wouldn't hate you. Please tell me. And she was really hesitant, but she opened up to me that she had scheduled to abort me. She didn't tell me everything all at once, but then throughout time, I gathered all the details. But it was at Mount Sinai Hospital in Hartford, Connecticut, 1981. And she paid for the abortion. She met with a counselor, but they didn't actually give her any counsel. The woman just said to her, this seems like the best decision for you to make. That's what she said to her. And she was really pressured by my father to get the abortion in the first place. It wasn't something that she really wanted. She was being coerced by him. But then she also had a church mentor that she knew that she was sinning because she was having sex outside of marriage, but she went to her mentor in hopes of some mercy. And her mentor basically said to her, knowing that you're pregnant now, like if you come back to this church, I'm not letting you in. Her exact words were, I'll put my foot in the door and not let you in. So her mentor was very judgmental, rejected her, and that just pushed her more towards having an abortion. And thankfully, God intervened at the 11th hour. It was a miraculous intervention. My mom left the counselor's office. She was about to go into the waiting room, and she just paused in the hallway to cry and to collect herself. And a janitor saw her, walked right up to her, looked her in the eyes, and said, "Do you want to have this baby?" And my mom said, "Yes." She said, "Give you the strength." And that was really what my mom needed to hear, those words of encouragement. She ended up looking down and then looking back up about 30 seconds later, and the woman was gone. It's just why she feels like she was an angel, because she said it was a very long hallway and she thought she would have been like midway through the hallway with her equipment. But she also said that her eyes were like pools of water, which was something that really caught her attention. Wow. But when she went back into the waiting room, the doctor called her name and she went into his office, and there was blood on the floor from the last abortion. And she was so disgusted that she just said, "I'm leaving. I've changed my mind. I want to keep my baby." And he said, "No." He said, "You've already paid for it." And she said, "No, I have changed my mind." And he said, "You're just nervous." And then he yelled at her. He yelled at her and said, "Don't leave this room." And she ran out, and she just took that secret and put it in the depths of her heart. And she had no intention of ever telling me. And she would have never told me. She would have never, ever told me. Never.
Wow.
But when I said to her, "Mom, you know, this lady at church said that God wanted me to know that something remarkable happened around the time of my birth," she was like, "Oh no, you know." I mean, she must have known that that was it. You know, she knew that was it. And I think she thought, okay, let me just hold off for a little bit. So she was like, "Yeah, I met an angel," as if that would satisfy me, you know. It's like, if you say I met an angel, but she's never said anything like that before, you know, I'm coming back a couple months later, like bugging you about it. And so when I found that story, I'm 40 years old now. I was in my early 20s. And again, coming from a family of, you know, politically all Democrats, no one ever voting pro-life or anything like that. Just kind of like, I think in many ways, a typical Black American family, abortion was just not, you know, something that we were not, you know, I know I have white friends that grew up and their parents like took them to the abortion clinics and stuff. It's like, that was not, you know, my reality. I wish that that was a reality that was more common in the Black community, but it's not as common. And especially with Black Protestants, it's more common with like Catholics and everything else. But
do you mean the families took them to like pray for women and at the abortion clinics, not to
go to the clinic? Yes. Thank you for clarifying. Yes. So some of my like white peers who are in the pro-life movement, if you ask them, you know, how, they'll say, "Oh, when I was young, my mom and dad took me to the abortion clinic to pray outside. I was 6 years old and I was holding a sign," or something like that, which is beautiful and awesome. But I'm just sharing that was not my reality at all.
Yeah.
I was so far removed. I couldn't even told you like who a pro-life activist or advocate was. If you had asked me to name one, I couldn't have told you in my 20s. I couldn't have even told you there was a movement that was fighting to end abortion.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about the Black community and abortion and being targeted by the racist, you know, eugenics industry with Planned Parenthood. I didn't know any of that. But God spoke to my heart and said, "Christina, I wanted you." And then he asked me a question. And the question was, "How do you think I feel about the others?" And that question was something that I knew that I needed to find out the answer to. And that I wasn't going to find it out just by even going to a pastor or my parent. I had to find it out. I had to research. I had to talk to women. I had to dig and study and learn and listen. And so I did. I set myself on that journey to do so. And shortly after that, the Lord led me to move to Washington, D.C. And right after college, I got a degree in business communications and I just put it to the side. And a lot of people were looking for jobs after college, and so was I. And I had job offers. And the Lord was like, "Put it all to the side. And I want you to move to Washington, D.C. And I want you to be a prayer missionary for the ending of abortion. And I want you to pray in front of the Supreme Court with this group called Bound for Life, the Justice House of Prayer." They're still there to this day. Mm-hmm. And I wore life tape, red tape that said life. And we prayed in front of the Supreme Court. And I did that for years until the Lord moved me to my next assignment. And so I'm just still on that journey. I've been just going from assignment to assignment, like this entire time. I was in DC for 3 or 4 years. Then the Lord said, move to Atlanta and pray for the Black community in Atlanta and the ending of abortion there, and join a house of prayer there called the International House of Prayer, which is now called Gate City. I moved there. And then after a couple of years, the Lord led me to come back home, which was good. Kept on my husband. So that was home. I met my husband, we got married, and I ended up working at a pregnancy center for 4 years. Then we became under great attack legislatively here. The pregnancy centers in Connecticut, they're unfortunately really been harassed by our local officials. They even passed some negative false legislation against them, accusing them of false advertising, which they never defined. It's just ridiculous, but it's kind of a national plan that they have to discredit and shut down centers. But in Connecticut, it's been advancing because it's such a pro-abortion state. So I moved to work for a family group called the Family Institute of Connecticut to fight that. And then throughout that, I was writing for Live Action, which is just, I think, the most phenomenal news organization and activism organization for pro-life work. And then just recently, I came on doing, along with what I used to do writing, now doing news correspondent stuff. So I've just been kind of listening to the Lord over the last 17 years, not perfectly, not always getting it 100% right, but listening to the Lord and allowing him to direct my steps. And so who knows what the next, 15, 20 years will look like. I mean, hopefully it will look like Roe's overturned and we're working on grassroots stuff, or we're fighting the battle state by state.
Right.
But God definitely called me to this fight. But you don't need to have a story like mine in order to be called to this. Right. Sometimes people think, well, I don't have a story like that. I didn't have an abortion and I wasn't, rescued, and I don't have a story. But we can all look and see that abortion is an injustice and that it takes the life of an innocent child. If you think about slavery, the abolitionists, they didn't have a story like Harriet Tubman had. Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, they fought it. They had a story. It was like it completely affected them because they were in it. But the Tappan brothers, or other white abolitionists, who they were not affected in the same exact way, but they could still look at it and see, okay, this is an injustice against a human being.
Right.
And in the same sense, whether we've had an abortion or not, whether we've been rescued or not, we could all look at this evil and say, okay, this is an injustice. We need to end it, and we need to help women.
Yeah, that's so good. So, one thing before, because I want people to connect with you and follow you, one quick question I have for you.
Sure.
I'm like, we could keep going forever, but
I know. I wish we could talk this. Longer. Yeah. Let me on another time and we can talk.
I will. Oh, I will. We'll be flooding the next America with pro-life everything. I would love to have you back. What is like one way that you think is just an absolute must for people apart from prayer? Because prayer, I believe, is like our most powerful weapon. So other than prayer, what is a way that people, everyone listening in today, right now, could help with this like mission of ending abortion?
So I'm going to say something very simple, because, of course I could say, go to the abortion clinic and pray outside. I could say, volunteer at a pregnancy center. I know we're in a pandemic, so it's like people might not feel comfortable, volunteering somewhere new, or it's winter, a lot of places are freezing. They might be a little bit nervous to just go to the streets right away. So I'm going to say something simple. Live Action, the organization that I work for, we have these phenomenal videos, and we have a website called 2363.org, and that stands for the 2,363 unborn children that are killed every day because of abortion. We have videos done by a former abortion doctor. His name is Dr. Anthony Levitano. And he details what it's like to have an abortion. Like every procedure, we have these graphics, and it's not, horrific to look at. People can look at it, even, teenagers, they can look at it. But it details what a first trimester, second trimester abortion is. And when people see these videos, it really does change their hearts, change their minds, because abortion's been so sanitized that when we say, oh, abortion, people are just so used to hearing that word, it doesn't even pack a punch, doesn't even sting. So they don't even often know, what is an abortion? Is it just a clump of tissues, a lump of cells being removed? What does it even look like? So I would tell people, go to the website, go to 2363.org, go to our Facebook, our Instagram, or social media, find those videos and share them. And I know that's not even an easy thing to say, because I know that sometimes with family and other people, it's like, oh gosh, if I share this, they're going to fight me in the comment section, or, you know, share it. If you're a little bit nervous and you're on Instagram, turn off your comments or share it in your stories, you know, share it in your stories first, like work your way up. Like if you feel nervous and you think I can't do it, you know, share it in your stories and hands off, get a little bit bolder, and then, you know, share and say, I believe this. Because if every one person shared a video like that, you know, what does the average person have? Probably like at least probably 1,000 followers on Facebook, you know, a few hundred on Instagram. And you never know, there could be a woman who sees that, who's literally planned to have an abortion on Saturday, and she could see that and she could cancel her appointment. So I would say start there.
Come on.
And then pray and ask God how you can use your specific skills and some of the things that I mentioned during this, this discussion. You know, how can you use your skills to bless the women and families in your community?
I love it. I've never heard anybody say that. And I think that's brilliant. You guys have already done the work. And guys, come on. We're living for eternity right now. Like all of you, possibly Christians, if you're not Christians, welcome. And I would love to have that conversation with you, or keep listening and discover more about what we're standing for. But come on, like, be courageous, be bold, fight for those in the womb. And I'm so grateful that your mom chose life. I'm so grateful for what you're doing. Yeah. Christina, how can people connect with you and follow you on social media?
Well, I'm on Instagram. It's Black Pro-Life Woman. I'm on Twitter, but really not that much, but I am on there sometimes. It's the same thing, Black Pro-Life Woman, but just BLK. And Instagram, it's all spelled out like normal, Black Pro-Life Woman. Christina Bennett is my name on Facebook. And then I have a website, ChristinaBennett.com. So you can shoot me an email through my website, or, you know, go on Instagram, you know, send me a comment or something. And I would love to connect with you guys.
Love it. And I would love you guys to connect with her too. Thank you for your time. For everyone tuning in right now, I'm telling you that you cannot rely on other people to do, like, to abolish abortion in America. We all play a part, and we reap what we sow. And so let's sow life into America. Let's sow these simple ways that God has blessed us to give back, give what we've been given, which is life. And so thank you for your time. Go follow Christina today. What we do today determines the America we live in tomorrow. And I will check you guys next week with The Next America. Thank you so much for tuning into The Next America. It would be such a joy to have you join our tribe. Our tribe consists of men and women who are monthly supporting, discipling women with Set Apart Women and The Next America. We want to help disciple men and women to go into the world, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, teaching them how to pray, teaching them how to do the things Jesus commanded us to do. If you want to join the tribe and help sow into this monthly, please visit jamielynwalnow.com and become a monthly patron.